This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Stylefile, where we cover everything and anything on the business of fashion. I'm Azura Rahman, and this week we speak to blogger Raja Nadia Sabrina and her new label, Aerie.
I wear the hijab, so probably instead of designing short skirts, I design maxi skirts. But it doesn't mean that I wouldn't design a sleeveless top, because I still wear sleeveless tops with jacket.
Next up, Mayatan Abdullah and I will be going over what's made headlines in the fashion industry.
Because they churned out all their favorites by the warehouse full, right?
Yep.
Even their full-priced items were still kind of in the mastiche category. So they've become the McDonald's of the designer world.
And finally, Emma Chong Johnston of tonguesheet.com will be giving her verdict on denim jackets.
I love that draped over the shoulder look, but it's so impractical. Like, you know, you see pictures of people just like wafting around with this jacket draped over the shoulders, and like, where are they going? Do they not need to move their arms? Is it gonna fall off? It's just so stupid.
First up though, here's our style maker for this week. It's Raja Nadia Sabrina of Aerie. Making the transition from fashion blogger to fashion designer is no longer uncommon, with big names such as Chiara Ferragni and Dina Tokyo to take inspiration from. With a ready customer base made up of adoring readers, it makes great commercial sense. Nonetheless, at the end of the day, it's a product that ultimately sells, and sell it did with the label started by blogger Raja Nadia Sabrina. Simply named Aerie, the ready-to-wear label is made up of modest, chic separates that are not only wearable, but also multi-purpose. I caught up with Sabrina to talk about her latest collection for the brand and her plans for the future of Aerie. Now, you launched a fashion line in October last year. But before that, you're not in design at all. You were actually a lawyer. What made you want to do fashion design then and start your own label?
Okay, I've actually practiced almost 7 years, and I actually tried everything under the sun in the legal industry. I did criminal, human rights, corporate, banking, cross-border financing, and as my ambition back then was just to be a lawyer. And I was a partner at the age of 27 years old in a respectable law firm, and I felt that, okay, I've done it.
What next?
So, what next? Yes, that's right. In the meantime, when I was practicing as a lawyer, I blogged. Mm-hmm. So I started the blog in the year 2009. It started out as something just for me to share my interests in art, in theaters, movies, paintings, visual arts, that kind of thing. And slowly, I shared about fashion. I felt that it actually is something that interests me. And in 2013, I started playing with the idea of having my own fashion label.
Right.
I researched, I read about it. So then in 2014, an opportunity came and I decided to take the leap.
So yeah. it happened quite organically in that sense.
Yes.
But did you also see that from your point of blogging, when you started putting up your posts on fashion, your posts on your outfits of the day, was it when things really took off for the blog as well, when your readership suddenly expanded because of that?
Yeah, because I started the blog anonymously. So at that time, it didn't gain as much readers. But when I started to share about fashion tips, about how I mix and match my clothes and all that, suddenly the followers increased, as well as for my Instagram. So from there, I realized that, people actually are interested in the styling tips and what I wear. So it was pretty overwhelming at the same time. But
you sound like you're still surprised by it.
Yeah, I am, because it's unexpected. And suddenly people were saying like, hey, that's the girl from the blog. I'm like, wow, it really caught me off guard.
Well, yeah. And in some ways that had your potential customers ready-made, right, from your blog. And then you started off Aerie. But to kick off with, Aerie, spelled A-E-R-E.
Yeah.
What's the story behind the name of the label?
Okay, Aerie is actually from the Latin word air. And I wanted something meaningful, something simple. So that is how I came up with Aerie. Air is something that is everywhere. We don't realize it, but we need it in order to breathe, in order to live. So for me, it's not just about the designs that I create with Aerie, but it is also a reminder for me to be thankful for whatever blessings and gifts that we have. And at the same time, I try to create designs which people don't realize that they need it, but actually they do.
Right.
Yeah. And I want to show the balance of grace, beauty and strength in a woman.
That's a very philosophical approach to fashion, right? Where does this come from?
For me, I think like every woman has grace and strength in her, because we deal with a lot of challenges, a lot of daily struggles that people may know or may not know about. And probably people may say guys are stronger because they are physically strong. But for me personally, I think women are emotionally stronger than men. I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, but I'm saying that we have to go through so much more. We have to juggle family and career.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are a housewife, you have to raise your kids, you know. It's a lot of things that a woman has to go through in this day and age.
So a label with feminist roots, I like it already. Okay, how does that translate into the clothes? How would you describe the pieces that you've created for the label?
Okay, for the first collection, The Nature of Grace, I started out with 6 designs, and the inspiration for that collection was nature. That's why the colors for it were neutrals and the focus point was blue. Why was that? Because blue represents the sky and the sea. And then I have neutrals colors to represent the sand and the clouds. So the inspiration was the beach, because to me it introduces airy as air. And even though air is all around us, when we are by the beach, we can feel it even more, the wind. Yeah, so for the first collection, I divided it to 3 main lines, which is workwear, which is airy might, and then casual wear, which is airy light, and then evening wear, which is airy night.
Mm-hmm.
So in every collection that I plan, I divide it into these 3 things, but I also make it interchangeable. So for the first collection, for instance, I have this top, which is reversible. So I can wear it as a top or as a jacket.
Okay.
And then I also have like sequins, which can change color from black to gold and silver to black, you know, that kind of thing. And I also focus on the details. I actually customize my own zippers.
Right.
And buttons. So I use those buttons and zippers for all my pieces.
So that's a signature of an airy piece. You actually have the buttons or the zippers.
Yes, yes. Right. I also focus on our own prints as well as innovative designs. For instance, I have this Edith detachable jumpsuit, which can be worn 3 ways. Why? Because it is detachable. So you can wear it as a one-piece jumpsuit, or you can wear it separately. So you can just wear the top with a skirt, or you can wear the pants with, you know, your other jackets and all that. So I try to make it versatile. Yeah.
Now, so you have, you know, signature zips.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your multi-purpose pieces. A lot of thought has been put into the pieces,
yes,
that you've put out.
Yes.
Who's behind the designs? Is it you, or do you work with a team of designers? How does it work?
Okay, I'm not fashion trained, but I come up with the idea and then I brainstorm with my team of designer,
right,
and production. I can sketch, but my sketches are really ugly. So I have a team who will translate my designs and we work on the production together.
So it's a collaborative effort.
Yes,
in
it's
that
a collaborative
sense.
Effort.
You know, for someone who says that she's not fashion trained, your first collection was a sellout. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that?
That's why, because I don't consider myself as a fashion designer as yet. I just create pieces that I myself would take pride in wearing. So I was actually surprised by the growth of the fan base. The revenue actually surpassed the target of this year. I'm like, wow, I've been really blessed by the support. It's really unexpected.
Right, okay. Really. And one of the main things for any designers, mm-hmm, are references. Are there any designers that you refer to, or, you know, are you particularly inspired by anyone when it comes to, mm-hmm, translating with your own designs?
Okay. I find inspiration everywhere. When we walk on the streets, or, I don't know, there's Instagram and there's a lot of fashion magazines. We derive our inspiration from there. But if I were to name one particular or maybe two style icon, probably it would be the Olsen twins. Because they didn't study fashion as well, and they're very successful in their own right, and it's inspirational for
now,
me. Yeah.
Obviously you're a very stylish hijabi yourself, and has that influenced how you design your pieces? Was it meant for modest Muslimah when you first designed Eri?
Okay, Eri is for everyone. I don't design it just for a specific Muslimah market, but it is something that I myself would wear. So, for instance, say when I go to shopping malls, probably I like the designs of a particular shorts or a sleeveless tank top. It's a bit challenging for me to find something that is easy for me to wear. So I wear the hijab. So probably instead of designing short skirts, I design maxi skirts. So I guess it comes naturally, but it doesn't mean that I wouldn't design a sleeveless top, because I still wear sleeveless tops with jackets. So I guess it does influence my designs.
But there's something for everyone at the same time.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which brings me to your second collection. And you had Lisa Srihani, for example, fronting that campaign for your collection called Blossoming of Grace. And this is your highly anticipated sophomore collection. What was that one all about then?
Okay, for the Nature of Grace collection, the campaign was different. At that time, I wanted to introduce the brand. So for the campaign, I used an international model to find international appeal. And for the Blossoming of Grace, because it's the blossoming of the brand, so I thought I wanted a campaign which is more lifestyle related, to show the strength and grace of a woman. So that's why I decided to call up my friends, Lisa Srihani and Ruzana Ibrahim, to do the photoshoot campaign with me. So I tried to portray women in different scenarios. The working woman, the ladies who are about to get ready to go out for an event, girlfriends catching up. It's something that is relatable. So that is what I tried to portray.
So the color palette is quite different from the first one, but the sequins are still there.
Yeah.
Is that a signature piece from your collection? Would you always have something with sequins on a jacket for all your lines?
Okay, for the first collection, I was more safe. I only played with the color blue, and the rest were neutrals. And then the response was really good, and I decided to play with more colors for the second collection. So for the second collection, Blossoming of Grace, added richer and deeper colors: the ox blood, the yale blue, the indigo, and the maroons. And I also added more designs. I think I became more confident because of the success of the first collection.
Right.
But since I'm going to come up with different collections every few months, it will always be different. Of course, it will be still airy. I will always play with different colors, different materials. But there are some things that I will always like. For instance, the sequins. So in the first collection, there were sequins and satin and textured fabric. For the second collection, I played with faux leather. In the future, I will play with other things as well.
Right.
Yeah.
What is your best-selling piece so far?
The best-selling piece for me so far are the tops, the blazers, and the jumpsuit.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you anticipate for it to be in that order as
no.
well?
No, I didn't. For instance, the printed top, which I actually customized in Japan, it was sold out in less than 2 days. I didn't expect that to happen. And also the Zarine reversible tops and jackets, that was sold out quite fast as well. As well as the textured jacket.
What have you learned as well from your customer base, you know, with your first collection and now your second collection, in terms of what they want and what they prefer?
What I've learned is that I had to increase quantity,
right?
Because people were actually frustrated that some of the designs and the colors were finished and they couldn't get their hands on it. So I gauged what is the popular items, and then I added more designs and I added more colors too, so that they have more choices.
Now, looking at your photos as well, you can see that, you know, that you're someone who's very creative with your hijab. Would you be interested in introducing a hijab line to Eri?
At the moment, I'm not looking at creating my own scarves line yet, but I'm partnering up with dark scarves for my next collection,
okay,
which will be released during Raya period. We are designing a few things together,
okay,
scarves as well as Aries designs. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, yeah. I hope Fashion Valley will increase their bandwidth for that one, because I'm sure, you know, things will crash otherwise. Yes. Now, yes. What's your advice for women seeking to dress modestly and yet look fashionable at the same mm-hmm. time?
Okay, for myself, it was actually quite a journey, because I only started to try and dress up modestly when I was in uni, probably 8 years ago. For me, just wear what you like, but at the end of the day, look at the mirror and see, does it look good? Are you comfortable in it? Are you confident in it? And mix and match. That is the key. Because when you're trying to start to dress modestly, for instance, I have my sleeveless tops and I have my short dresses. So what do I do with it? Just be creative. For instance, the short dresses, just wear it with the pants and yeah, make it work. And apart from that, when you purchase pieces, make sure that you can use it many, many times.
Okay.
I mean, some people don't want to wear the same item a lot of times, but I'm not that person. I like to wear pieces which I can create different looks with. For instance, one jacket, you can wear it with the pants, you can wear it with a dress inside. So don't be afraid to mix and match.
Right.
What I like to do when I mix and match my colors, I wear a pop of color, whether it's the hijab or it's the top, but just one item. The rest, make it neutral, either black or grey or nude. So that is how I play with mix and match.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can always look at your Instagram in case you're not sure. Now, obviously you're a high achiever, Sabrina. You became a partner at law firm at 27 years old, and now you've started on your own fashion line. You've got two collections. What's going to happen next?
Okay. We just started last year, and it's been growing really fast. At the moment, we are partnering up with stockists like Fashion Valley and other offline stores like Movier. But I really hope that one day we will grow so that I can see my own store and probably even stock my items internationally. Social media especially helps a lot as well, because I created the hashtag WearAerie. So people from all over the world are actually sharing their OOTDs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really great, because I get to see people not just from Malaysia, but from Amsterdam and from Estonia and Singapore are wearing Aries pieces. And that is a great feeling. There's this one instance where a blogger in Estonia, she wore Aries items, but she didn't mention Aries in her Instagram post. And someone was commenting and tagging me, and she said, that's Aries. It was a personal achievement for me that people actually recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good feeling after all the hard work, yeah.
Coming up next, Mayatan Abdullah and I will be going over what's made headlines in the fashion industry. But before that, here's Superstar by Sonic Youth, and this was played at Rodarte's Fall 2015 collection in New York. This is Stylefile at BFM 89.9. This is Stylefile on BFM 89.9, bringing fashion to you over the airwaves. I'm Azura Rahman, and it's time for Style Scoop with Mayatan Abdullah. First story for this week, Michael Kors getting too big for its boots. Oh,
Remember how we were talking about how he was a multi-billionaire now.
You know what? One day you're up, one day you're down, right? And it's just come out in the businessinsider.com that Michael Kors' business is actually slipping. Shares are down by 34% in the past year. And despite overall strength in the apparel industry, the fashion company is the only major specialty retailer that's not trading above the five-year median right now, according to a recent report by Morgan Stanley. Now, the report pointed to one mistake that's the cause of this climb down in its business: rapid expansion. So this is, I guess, a case of where you're a victim of your own success, right? You know, of course, when you're available in more doors, you can drive profits in the short term, but it can also hurt the brand, right?
Absolutely. I think they forgot that fashion, you know, all things said and done, is the most cruel lover.
It is. Yeah,
people fall in love with you and then they fall out. Mm. And I think Michael Kors, they wanted to ride the waves when the brand was at its height of popularity and they wanted to milk it for as far as they could go. So they expanded really quickly. But I also think that they believed there was going to be sustained interest in the brand. And really what keeps a brand going is respect. If you keep your fans at arm's length, you don't get too familiar, you remain slightly out of reach, keep surprising, keep delighting them, you'll be able to sustain that interest. And always make less than your customers want to consume, because once you satisfy them, they move on, right? You know, if people queue up for popcorn and then when they have too much of it, they're like, meh.
So, which is exactly the opposite of what Michael Kors did, right? Because then it had, you know, it's basically segmented into three different kind of tiers. They have the ultra expensive, you know, line that's straight off the catwalk, and then you have what's available, you know, your bags or typical totes that's available in the department store, and then they actually have a diffusion line that's just for outlets, and that's where they kind of cannibalize each other and kill the top end of the market as well, right?
Yeah, it did a lot of damage to the brand, I think. Because they churned out all their favorites by the warehouse full, right?
Yep.
Even their full-priced items were still kind of in the masstige category. So they've become the McDonald's of the designer world. That's what it is.
Do you think this is what happens when you have accountants that are running labels as opposed to, you know, I don't know, fashion people? I don't know how else to say it, in the sense that, you know, it's tempting not to make and hay while the sun is shining, right? When you're seeing that, you know, there's a huge demand for your core item, it seems absurd to not give the public what they want. But this is where, you know, it's like the snake that gets bitten back in the tail, right, in that sense. So it doesn't make sense to do it in the long term, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a business move, I don't think it's dire, though. I mean, earnings are down, but they still sell. They obviously made a lot of money as well in the past 5 years as a result of being everywhere, being accessible. So now's the time to put their earnings towards innovation, encourage individuality, make a comeback. And I think it's time for something very drastic and dramatic.
Do you think they'll scale back on their offering, on their SKUs? Do you think they'll scale back on the amount of doors that they're in at the moment?
Definitely, they're going to scale back on doors. I think, you know, even big time designers such as Matthew Williamson have done so. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. So scaling down on doors is one thing. Scaling down on SKUs, maybe.
Maybe less of the outlet special lines, I suppose,
less
right?
Less of the totes, less of the Selmas, please. And then just come on, you know, bring on a big design wave, maybe. Maybe a big design wave will save them or increase.
The truth of it is that Michael Kors is much more than just a tote, you know. Because, you know, if you see the stuff that he has on the runways, he's got some really pretty that's being churned out at the moment. But it's just a shame that he's become known for something else.
The totes have kind of just diluted everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and at the same time, you know, it's the classic thinking of why should I pay, you know, $300 for a Michael Kors bag in a department store where you can get one at the outlet for, you know, half the price,
you
right?
You can go to Guangzhou or Shenzhen and get it for like a quarter of the price.
There you go. So Michael Kors, we'll see how they'll be doing and whether they'll be regrouping and re-strategizing their plans for the next year. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, this would ring alarm bells. I imagine it would. You know, a climb down by 34% is a huge amount.
Yeah, Longchamp, you better watch out as well. You better have something in the works as well.
There you go. Warning words from Maya Tanandula.
Macam lah, aku expert.
We all are in some ways. Anyway, for our second story for the week, menswear, another route to the top in fashion. Now, this was an interesting piece that was turned up by the Guardian fashion pages. Basically, they asked whether a career in menswear is the new route to a top job in fashion. The appointment of two new creative directors at DKNY, Dao Yi Chow and Maxwell Osborne, also known as the label Public School, could suggest as much. They started off working on Sean Combs' clothing. Sean Combs, also known as PDD, Puff mm-hmm. Daddy. He has his own clothing label called Sean John, of course. And they started off with that. And then they opened their own label, Public School. And now they're at DKNY. So it's a rather interesting route to fashion. People normally, you know, do menswear or womenswear and kind of stick in one direction. But, you know, it just shows that things, you know, there's a different ways of spinning the story in fashion, right?
Yeah, but it also seems as if some of the most successful designers have kind of gone down that route as well. They start in menswear before they make it big time. Eddie Slimane did that. Raf Simons did that. Perhaps menswear is great for cutting one's teeth. But then if you think about it, womenswear is always a bigger portfolio, right? It's more varied, more categories.
Brings in more money.
Infinitely more articles as well. So yeah, it's always something to graduate to, menswear and then womenswear. But you know what's interesting is that menswear for the last decade or so has seen a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be really interesting to see menswear grow so big that there'll come a day where people cut their teeth on women's wear and then grow into menswear.
I think the great thing about, you know, the designers who do cut their teeth in menswear, and you are right, I mean, the most famous example of that is Alexander McQueen, of course.
Oh yeah.
He started off working on Savile Row in London, you know, cutting his teeth, making suits for, you know, the Prince of Wales, for Prince Charles, right? And that's where you kind of learn the foundation of tailoring and suiting, which is in many ways the backbone of couture, for example, of, you know, of structured looks.
Of the craft.
Of the craft, exactly, where you learn how to really, really sew. And it kind of translates into the work that you do later on as well, I imagine, which was the case you could really see in the kind of detailing that you had at Alexander McQueen, at the house of Alexander McQueen. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, seeing that, you know, public school is, you know, pretty much streetwear inspired. What kind of what will they bring to the DKNY fashion stable, which has been quite lackluster for the past 10 years or so?
Yeah, they haven't been making waves.
Yeah. So you know, for designers out there, if you're thinking of going into women's wear, maybe, you know, starting off with designing suits could be a starter point, right? Mm. For our final story for this week, Instagrams is now shoppable. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been seeing this all over the place over Instagram of the bloggers that I follow and of certain fashion labels that I follow. It's now shoppable thanks to something called liketoknow.it. So like to know it, basically. So if you follow people like Men Repeller, for example, or Vogue even, it's basically giving you the option to shop an Instagram post. Not as straightforward as you think though, Maya, because I've gone through it. Personally, basically, if you see someone with a top that you like, for example, you need to register on liketoknow.it, and then from there on, they will then send you an email of an image that you like, and then you gotta click through. Then you buy. By the end of it, you know, it's just way too long. It's like 4, 5, 20 clicks
exactly
away from the image.
Yeah, I came across Like to Know It on Insta because I was searching for a particular bag and I was on a hashtag and it popped up. And I actually don't remember signing up for it, but I'm starting to get these emails in now from them. And the thing is, none of the mechanics were explained, you know, whether it's on the Like to Know It profile page or whatever, or that little profile bit at the top of the Instagram account. So I thought it was just another aggregator like Polyvore or Keep or list.com.
Right.
And these people have been doing it for a longer time with a lot less steps between the consumer and the retailer.
That's the thing. I agree, it's a complete palaver. I mean, I would love something that's one click in-app kind of option as opposed to, you know, having to go through email from Instagram. Just too many going back and forth, even on a smartphone. But the thing is, what's being said by analysts is better than nothing. You know, Instagram, for whatever it is, it shows lots of great images, but it hasn't really got that shoppability yet, you know. Mm-hmm. Even for your, you know, renowned players like Net-a-Porter, you know, there's still things that you have to look up through the website. And it's interesting how they've not really taken advantage of this yet.
Absolutely. And I think Instagram, right? I mean, I got some insight recently about how Instagram, just through visuals and a little caption, is now the most powerful form of endorsement on social media, especially in the area of travel. And this is where I got the insight from, because for travel, it's trumped all the trawling that consumers have to do on TripAdvisor and Airbnb to suss out whether a place is good or not to stay at. So people look on Insta and they decide what they like from the people who post, whom they follow,
right,
and whom they already have a modicum of trust or respect for.
Right.
So that's why Instagram is now more powerful. And Instagram, you know, it's already a shopping destination anyway. The number of unofficial Insta shops, I believe, are
absolutely
in the millions. It would be interesting to really tap into that connection between Instagram, shoppability, and link it, you know, directly to retailers. And I think even app-in-app is really just too much waiting,
mm-hmm,
especially for people on mobiles.
Right.
Instagram is only accessible through mobile. I mean, yeah, you can look at things on the web, but, you know,
who does that?
you can only be active, like, you know, double tap and things,
right,
like that,
right, right,
you know, ideally with your phone. So there has to be a way.
I imagine that, you know, if the Instagram people have, you know, The Instagram people are working on this as opposed to another filter. I think that, you know, it would be great to have that shoppability, and at the same time, I guess they will probably get a commission out of it, right? It makes commercial sense to actually have this in place.
I know.
As for now, like to know it is one way to make your Instagram shoppable. And it would be interesting to see how long and how far they'll be able to sustain this model, seeing how kind of clunky it is, really.
Yeah, no, I sense they're going to pivot soon, and they're going to find a better way. What would your ideal be? You know, like tap on it and buy immediately.
Tap on it and buy immediately. That's what it is,
from
right?
Chiara Ferragni's, is that her name? Chiara Ferragni's Instagram.
Absolutely. So, you know, I wait with bated breath. After the break, we've got Emma Chong Johnston, editor-in-chief of tonguesheet.com, with the latest trend for you to consider. It's Azura Rahman on Style File. Next up, we have Emma Chong Johnston of tonguesheet.com, and she revisits the denim jacket. Denim jackets. Now, what's the denim jackets like for 2015? Because, you know, it's a trend that kind of surfaces every once in a while with different silhouettes and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, they're definitely back this time. And I think the key kind of denim jacket look now is a bit more cropped, a bit more fitted, and like very light washes. So like none of your like 90s kind of like indigo style, that's not really around too much. Just like, yeah, the really kind of pale blues.
And are we looking at the traditional denim jacket shape, or are we looking at, you know, jackets made out of denim? There's a difference there, isn't it?
There is. Actually, surprisingly, it is the traditional denim jacket, just kind of like that shrunken fit. But yeah, I mean, you can also get, like, I've seen a lot of like denim kimono jackets and like denim blazers, but I think you should just go traditional and stick with the old silhouette.
So how would you wear it for now?
The nice thing about the denim jacket is that you can kind of stick it over anything and it works. It's a nice way of like kind of making more formal outfits a bit more casual. Like, if you don't look too dressed up, or if you're worried about looking too overdressed, like stick it in your bag and then throw it on when you get to the place. And the other thing that people are doing a lot more now of is double denim. I sound so
the Canadian tuxedo.
Oh yeah, kids these days bringing back the double denim. But yeah, I mean, it works. I think what you have to keep in mind is different shades of denim, like keeping your silhouettes quite paired back, like, you know, so it's not, and then having some kind of other material to break up the two denim shades.
I guess even if, you know, you could even do triple denim, like a denim shirt, denim jeans, and a denim jacket, which is probably a bit too much.
Okay. Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake.
Yes, exactly. You headed in that direction. How would you wear it? Would you button it up? Would you drape it over your shoulder? What was your recommendation for this?
I love that draped over the shoulder look, but it's so impractical. Like, you know, you see pictures of people just like wafting around with this jacket draped over the shoulders, and like, where are they going? Do they not need to move their arms? Is it gonna fall off? It's just so stupid. I mean, like, it looks good, but it's not practical.
I've reconciled with the fact that the reason why those shots look good, because it's literally a split moment, right?
Yeah, and then they take it off.
Exactly. The jacket maybe fell off in the next moment. I mean, I've tried that whole draping over the shoulder thing. It lasts for all of 5 seconds.
Yep. Yeah, no, don't button it up all the way. One, because it will be super hot here, and the other because it's just a bit more relaxed if you leave it unbuttoned. Mm-hmm. I'd maybe like roll up the sleeves, scrunch them up a bit. The whole idea, I think, is to look as effortless as you can. So just kind of throw it on and go.
The great thing is you probably have it hanging in your cupboard already,
yes,
right?
Yes, you do, yeah.
Right, okay. So we're looking for a more light faded wash then. And that was this week's episode of Style File. If you've missed any parts of the show at all, don't forget to catch up with our podcast on www.bfm.my. And of course, don't forget to like our Facebook page, Style File on BFM 89.9. Before we go, though, we leave you with Disco Very by Warpaint. And this was played at Jill Stewart's Fall 2015 Runway Collection in New York. It's Style File on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.